This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. On the line with us is Christopher, is it Massicott or Massicotti, Christopher?
You got it, Massicott.
Massicott, thank you. The chair of the Victory Fund Campaign Board and a partner at DS Political. VictoryFund.org is the website, the Twitter handle, DS Political. Christopher, it's not a blue wave. How about a rainbow wave? Tell us about this.
We've identified, the Victory Fund has identified, you know, almost 400 LGBTQ candidates that are running for office this year. That is obviously a huge, a record number. We've smashed the our previous record. You know, most of them are Democrats, and they're running not just because, you know, they're LGBTQ, but they're running as a result of Donald Trump being elected and wanting to help fight his policies. We've had about 100 and something anti-LGBT bills introduced into various state legislatures. 12 of them in the last year have become law, and it's really important to have a seat at that table. So we have so many more LGBTQ candidates running, not only for state legislative offices, but giant, you know, big offices, statewide offices like governor of Vermont, Colorado, Oregon, Texas. And we're really going to see a huge number increase in the number of LGBT elected officials, where we're at somewhere around 550 now.
Are these virtually all Democrats?
They're virtually all Democrats. Victory Fund is a nonpartisan organization. We do support Republicans where we can, but as you know, it's really hard being a Republican, an LGBTQ Republican, in today's political climate.
The decision, I always mangle the name, Obergefell.
Obergefell, yeah.
Obergefell, thank you. Was the decision where the Supreme Court essentially legalized gay marriage nationwide, and Justice Kennedy was the swing vote on that. Kennedy is being replaced, in all probability, with Kavanaugh. If not by Kavanaugh, then with another right-wing crank from the Federalist Society.
Mm-hmm.
And I think pretty much no matter who Trump puts in there, it will be somebody who's hostile to those rights that Kennedy was always respectful of. I mean, you know, Kennedy was a reliable right-wing vote when it came to, you know, destroying unions or supporting, you know, big corporations or polluters. But he did support gay rights and or LGBTQ rights. What kind of damage could Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court do to this? Do you expect that this is a case that might get relitigated?
I do, and I think it's really important that we elect LGBTQ candidates to the table. We have some great candidates that are running for the Senate. Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona is poised to take Jeff Flake's seat. Tammy Baldwin is running for re-election. She's running a very strong re-election campaign. And I'm worried about these decisions because we just saw with the cake bakers that they, you know, that decision was came down with the current court that we had. Think about all of the other cases that are winding their way through the courts today, that they're going to end up in a court that includes Brett Kavanaugh. And those decisions that have been already done, like Justice Kennedy, not only was he the swing vote, but he also wrote the opinion. We lost somebody who was very good on those particular issues.
Right.
So I'm very worried about a Kavanaugh justice, or, you know, anybody else that Trump will nominate.
Yeah. How can people support what you're doing? We're talking with Christopher Massicott. He is the chair of the Victory Fund Campaign Board, a partner at DS Political. VictoryFund.org is the website. I'm assuming go to Victory Fund and pitch in?
VictoryFund.org. We have a list of all of our candidates. You know, we're supporting them at various levels. We have a group of spotlight candidates that are really the ones that we're really focusing on that are going to be a historic first, or they're going to be that they're really important because they're running for the state legislature in what so-called lower equality states, or that they're going to make a historic first. Victory Fund is, you know, we hear about, like, oh, I was the first, you know, LGBTQ person elected to Congress from Florida, or the first, you know, African-American elected to a state legislature who's LGBTQ. And Victory Fund is in the business of making historic first history, and we really need people to support candidates through money. And if you live in that district, talk to your friends about these candidates and you know, talk to them about the upcoming election. Make sure every last person that you know votes. I'm from Massachusetts, and I happened to be in Massachusetts during the primary there, and I was talking to every single one of my friends that I knew that could vote for an LGBTQ candidate, because that's how people decide how they're going to vote, whether or not their, you know, political ads do make a big impact, but it's also word of mouth. So donating money to the candidates that you care about, to areas that you care about where people are from, and know that we have candidates running all over the country. It's not just in New York or Massachusetts or California. We have an amazing candidate in the Kansas 2nd Congressional District, Cerise Davis, who's going to be the first Native American LGBTQ person elected to Congress. And, you know, she's really poised to win that race against Kevin Yoder.
I've noticed that some candidates seem to be putting front and center the fact that they're LGBTQ, or and others, you know, like the woman who's running for, the trans woman who's running for governor of Vermont, you know, pretty much will acknowledge it, but say, you know, really, let's talk about the potholes. Let's talk about, you know, healthcare in Vermont. Let's talk about, you know, the security of the citizens. Is that decision to front and center that part of a person's life, or put it into the background? Is that a largely regional decision, or has the acceptance of LGBTQ people broadly reached a threshold in the United States where, in most places anyway, it's not that big a deal?
I think you're right in that we have reached a level of acceptance that it's not that big of a deal, but it is still a huge part of who you are. People, not only do they vote for the person and how they that person is going to represent them, but they also vote for them, like, what are you going to do for me? And you were talking about Christine Hultquist, who's running for governor of Vermont. She was the CEO of the statewide power utility company there. She brought that company back from the brink of disaster, doing it through, you know, renewable energy and environmental friendly practices. And she's running on a platform of bringing, you know, broadband internet to, you know, parts of rural Vermont that just doesn't have that. And when you have a state where there's, you know, a lot of, you know, lower income people, having access to broadband internet, having the ability to have, you know, information being able to flow in and out of a rural state like that is so important. And she's just really running on, you know, building up the infrastructure, and she has a proven record that she can do that.
Yeah, especially when you can, you know, if it can be done as a public utility like Chattanooga did. Christopher, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you. Christopher Massicott, the chair of the Victory Fund Campaign Board. Victoryfund.org is the website. Check it out and see how you can help out. There's a long way to go and a lot of work to do here for full and equal rights for all Americans. It's 15 minutes, coming up on 15 minutes past the 8.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. Welcome back. Dave, you're listening to Sirius. Let me put you on hold. I'll pick you up when Sirius is on with us. Right now, they're not. Jacob in Baltimore, Maryland, watching us on YouTube. Hey, Jacob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to go back to, you know, a lot of people have been talking about, including yourself, about the, you know, war in Afghanistan and how it has been dragging on. We've been, you know, there for 17 years now, I think it is. Or maybe not quite, but closing in. And, you know, a lot of people are saying we're never going to win the war. And I agree, you know, am not for American imperialism, but I just think that a lot of people are misunderstanding why we're actually in Afghanistan, that we're not there to fight the Taliban in Afghanistan anymore.
No, in fact, we're negotiating with the Taliban right now.
Right. As Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who was the chief of staff for Colin Powell during the Bush years, points out, we're actually in Afghanistan right now because we need to have, you know, from an American empire perspective, we need to have a forward position where we can camp out our troops and have a position where we can strike immediately with hard power against China and its Silk Road Initiative. And if we withdraw from Afghanistan, we lose that forward-placing foothold, which doesn't allow us to, you know, intervene in the area nearly as quickly, and we lose massive amounts of influence geopolitically. So we're just, I mean, the plan is, you know, to just never leave, and it's because we want to have a forward position where we can exert, you know, hard power if necessary over, you know, increasingly expanding China.
I think there's one other thing you're missing here, Jacob, and that is that in the early years of the, I believe it was the early years of the Trump administration, I might be wrong on this, it might have been way back toward the end of the Bush administration. Or it could have been done under Obama, frankly, but I'm pretty sure that it was Trump. There was a survey done of the mineral wealth of Afghanistan, and they concluded that there was over $1 trillion worth of mineral wealth in that country that could be extracted, and that at the top of that list in terms of value to American industry was lithium and other rare earth metals that could be used for advanced batteries and advanced electronics. And that added a big a big boost to, hey, you know, maybe we should be going after Afghanistan or stay in Afghanistan.
I totally agree. That report, I've also read that report.
It was like a year or so ago that came out.
Obviously, a massive amount of corporate, you know, because the corporations and the imperialist, tendencies of America and the military-industrial complex, obviously, often their interests become intertwined. So I agree with you that both of those reasons, but I'm saying even without the mineral wealth, which I agree is an extra reason for them to stand there and actually try to control large amounts of territory, but we're never going to give up those bases and that forward position just because, from the perspective of the military, their perspective is that they don't want to give up that forward position
sure.
to act, you know, on China.
Well, so Afghanistan is one of the most strategic positions in the Middle East. I mean, you know, I'm with you. Jacob, thank you for the call. I mean, you know, once again, it just reminds us how different the world would be if George W. Bush had not lied us into a war in Iraq and had taken the offer of Mullah Omar to arrest bin Laden and turn him over to a third party for trial. And that would have been the end of that, right? And we could have had closure for the 9/11 families. We'll be back. Back, Tom Hartman here with you, and the House Republicans, by the way, have a new scam that they're pushing right now, and I find this just fascinating. It's still 9/11, and if you have thoughts on that, feel free to call. I realize we spent the whole first hour on it as well, but this is just another example of how. I'm lacking a word, how absolutely cynical the modern-day Republican Party is, and particularly these Republicans in Congress. They want to pass a tax cut. Now, let me back up a little bit. The big hit that Republicans are taking right now on the GOP tax scam, on this $1.5 trillion tax break, I mean, I was on Fox News on Sunday, and they were like, well, you know, how are you going to run against a great economy? And I said, really simple. You know, this economy is not just hot, it's on fire, as in pouring gasoline on a small fire, turning it into a big fire. And it's because, you know, Donald Trump and the Republicans in Congress borrowed $1.5 trillion on our children's credit card and gave it to billionaires, and some of it trickled down into our economy, and it's goosing the economy. No doubt about that. But what happens when the bill comes due? And, you know, I realize, you know, we can talk about modern monetary theory and we can get into all kinds of nuance, but that's an argument that Fox viewers understand. And that's why I made that pitch on Fox. And I said, you know, you're looking at inflation. You're looking at, an economic depression. You're looking at all kinds of, and you're looking at, you know, as the interest rates go up, the federal government having to spend more and more and more just on interest to service the national debt. And so what's happened is Americans have figured this out, including Republican voters. There is virtually not one single Republican who is running for the House of Representatives, and 100% of them are running right now for re-election. The House of Representatives is re-elected every 2 years, every single seat. In the Senate, it's every 6 years, and one-third of the Senate stands for re-election every 2 years. So you got about a third of the senators running for re-election right now, but 100% of the members of the House of Representatives. And to the best of my knowledge, not one of them is running on, I was the guy who passed the Bush tax cuts. Not one. Because Americans have figured out, my wages didn't go up, my taxes didn't go down, but hey, those billionaires, they got more money than ever before. Apple Corporation, $100 billion, I mean, you know, billions and billions of dollars to all these big companies that, of course, is juicing their stock value, but it's a sugar high. It's a total scam. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot of sophistication to figure that out. Even the average Fox viewer, I believe, has figured that out. So the House Republicans, Paul Ryan and his buddies, Steve Scalise and Kevin McCarthy and these scam artists in the House of Representatives, the Republican House of Representatives, have decided we've got to convince the average Republican voter, the Fox News viewer, that we actually are interested in tax cuts for average working people. Now, you know, again, what people, Fox News viewers, don't realize is that when you cut taxes on working people, wages will go down over the next few years because employers know that these people have more money in their pockets, and so, hey, they can cut their wages. But that's a whole separate argument. Again, you know, keeping this to the really simple stuff, the Republicans are saying, we need to convince people that we're fighting for tax cuts for average working people. Even though there's no way, between now and November, no way that the Senate is going to vote on another tax cut. It ain't going to happen. Mitch McConnell's not going to let it happen. The Republicans in the Senate are not that stupid. But in the House, what they figured out is they're going to create a tax cut for average working people, and they're going to pull it up for a vote, knowing that it's going to go nowhere. All the Republicans will vote for it. All the Democrats will vote against it. It'll pass the House, then it'll die in the Senate. We know all this. And then the campaign ads in November against the Democrats will be, your Democratic member of the House of Representatives voted against cutting your taxes. This is just a purely cynical political ploy. And you know, this is something that they are, you know, just, you know, Representative Leonard Lance of New Jersey, for example, says, if we were to pass that here in the House, it would be an exercise in futility because it would never pass in the Senate. Well, duh. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's the whole point. Meanwhile, you've got just this absolute disaster among our first responders. John Devlin was on our program, and he has since died. He died 2 years ago. We interviewed him a number of times on this show and also on my TV show. And here's an interview from him a few years back.
Being an operating engineer, I have licenses. I have hazmat. It's a heavy-duty license.
He was one of the 9/11 volunteers.
What we were breathing. We knew the toxicities, and there were over 1,000 in the air. But there were no masks. There were no respirators. There was nothing down there for us. We were breathing all the toxicities that were in the air and that were in our food while we were down there. It took almost 2 weeks, they started giving out particle masks, which if anybody with half a brain knows, it's for particles and not for toxic fumes. They finally, I think it was a month or so into it, they started giving out respirators and with cartridges. But again, they were the wrong cartridges. And by that time, for the ones that were down there in the beginning, we took our legal hit. We took our death sentence.
Nearly 10,000 people affected by cancer in Lower Manhattan right now. 2,000 dead, including John Devlin. He died a year or so ago. Dead from volunteering to help after 9/11. And another 8,000 people who have died of cancer, who have cancer, or both, who lived in the area. Including a number of men who are getting breast cancer, which is something that's very, very rare in men. So on this anniversary of 9/11, if we're going to remember someone, I mean, you know, certainly remembering the victims, remembering the people on the planes, remembering the people in the towers, including those people who jumped, which is just so tragic. But let's also remember the 10,000 people now who have died as a result of the Bush EPA coming out and saying, nothing to worry about, everything's fine, don't worry. And then the years and years and years that Republicans fought funding for the 9/11 responders, victims fund.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
The Republican Party fought tooth and nail to keep that money from those first responders. And for many of them, it's too late. We'll be back. All aboard. It's a once-in-a-lifetime luxury Alaskan cruise on the Regent 7C Mariner, July 24th, 2019. For more information, Keen Luxury Travel, 800-856-1155. And did I mention, we'll be getting active on board with special events with yours truly, me, as we visit Ketchikan, Juneau, Skagway, Sitka, Hubbard Glacier, and Anchorage. 34 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars. And a lot going on in the news today. It's 9/11. We've been, you know, looking back on 9/11, the disaster that was the result of the Bush administration ignoring intelligence reports, not just from the CIA, but also from the foreign intelligence services, the Israelis, the Russians, the Brits, the French, and others, I believe South Africa as well, and Australia. And then once it happened, George W. Bush deciding that instead of arresting bin Laden, the guy who was the criminal behind this, and going, you know, maybe to Pakistan or Indonesia, I forget where he was, and getting Sheikh Mohammed and, you know, the others who were involved. I mean, this should have been a police action, and ultimately it was, by and large. Instead of doing that, he would rather blow up a couple of countries because he thought it would make it easier for him to get reelected in 2004 and thus in 2005 to privatize Social Security. And you recall, right after the 2004 election, Trump came out and Bush came out and he said, I've got a lot of political capital here and I intend to spend it on privatizing Social Security. And then he went on the campaign trail in 2005, traveling around the country, pitching the idea of turning your Social Security over to the banks. And every speech he gave caused his popularity to go down. And so, you know, ultimately he abandoned the idea. The Republican Party abandoned the idea, although Trump is now out saying, you know, those Democrats, they want to destroy your Social Security and your Medicare. I mean, he actually is tweeting this and saying this in his speeches. The Democrats created Social Security. The Democrats created Medicare. And the Republicans said, oh, that's socialism. We can't have that. That's a terrible thing. That's socialism. Donald Trump is lying through his teeth about all this stuff. I mean, it's just breathtaking. Uday, am I saying that right, in Bloomfield, New Jersey, listening on Sirius XM?
Hello, Tom. It's Uday.
Uday.
But I have gotten used to being called Uday. So, hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
I am a bit nervous, never been on the radio, but I believe I have a story to tell, especially with respect to 9/11 and the environmental contamination in the city.
Okay.
I am an industrial hygienist, and that's what I do for a living. After 9/11, the most prominent carcinogen, that being asbestos, that you have mentioned so very many times with respect to your father's ailment, there was a complete cover-up by New York City Department of Environmental Protection.
under Rudy Giuliani.
Precisely. I have, and I, who knows to what extent the EPA was complicit in it. All of the claims being made by all of the politicians that there isn't a problem whatsoever with respect to asbestos were all false. Rumsfeld, if he ever told any truth, was when he made the statement, I believe on September 21st, it had not rained for a long time. He said on TV, and nobody can find the tape, he said, thank God it's going to rain and the asbestos cloud will settle down.
Wow.
So this is Rumsfeld. But anyway, I agree with him because I had seen asbestos debris all over around Ground Zero. But my work that I did was particularly focused on mercury contamination. There was a wonderful book written by Juan Gonzalez from Amy Goodman's partner, and he was at Daily News at that time. He actually chronicled the amount of mercury that had been stored in the basement. I forget exactly what the quantity was.
This was so metallic mercury? I assumed that the mercury came from, like, fluorescent bulbs and things. There was actually a stash of metallic mercury in one of the towers? Why?
According to Juan, yes. That's a mystery which we don't know about. So, yes, you're right. Fluorescent lamps, copying machines, computer screens, your thermostat, God knows, almost mercury is used so commonly.
Yeah.
Or was. So my preliminary work was first challenged by the EPA. And then I'm forgetting the researcher's name, but he's at Medgar Evers College in Brooklyn, who has done a lot of work with mercury. Mm-hmm. EPA, the professor from Medgar Evers, and many other people, including Joel Kufferman from New York Environmental Law and Justice Project. So we walked around and we found concentrations which, according to California Department of Health, 300 nanograms is the reference limit, and we found concentrations greater than that under people's bed and in people's pillows around ground zero.
Oh, my.
And just to add to this, there is a group that makes mercury measuring devices out of Canada. Their name is Tecran. I might be mispronouncing it or misremembering it. I didn't have any fun, so I was calling folks to see if they would donate us their equipment. And while talking to the folks at Tecran, this is what I remember being told by the fellow who answered my call, that there is a fellow who works for U.S. EPA out of Research Triangle Institute. Tecran had sent their equipment to this person. He studies mercury distribution all over the world. Mm-hmm. And he was working at that time for USGS, and I don't know what the equations were. But they had confirmed presence of airborne mercury throughout lower ground zero in lower Manhattan. And to offer some medical evidence, I had once done work for Sierra Club, who were at 110 John Street. It's right next to ground zero. Mm-hmm. And the receptionist there, I will not mention her name, she and her husband, who also worked downtown, had some constant health problems. And they were diagnosed by one physician as related to mercury exposure.
Mm. Wow.
So,
this is serious stuff.
Just wanted
Uday, I need to wrap this up. We've been talking for 6 minutes, which is unusually long. Your point is that there was massive mercury contamination post 9/11, right? Yeah, okay.
And thank you for giving me so much time.
My pleasure. No, thank you very much. It's a compelling story and one that really needs to be told. This is serious stuff. Barbara in Seattle listening on KBCS. Hey, Barbara, what's up?
IFF.
Which stands for?
That's why 9/11 happened. They were not allowed to mobilize the planes. Identification, friend or foe.
Okay.
Do you know that?
I know that there were exercises off the East Coast that had tied up many of the jet aircraft of, I believe it was the National Guard, that might have otherwise intercepted these planes.
Is there anybody that has the records of traffic controllers?
I don't know.
That's the most important question, because I know a little bit about structural steel and all the other conspiracy theories. It's just like the assassination of JFK and Martin Luther King. You just set up people and things and then cut down any control over the people that you know will do the damage.
Yeah, I get you, Barbara. Thank you. I don't think this is the time to get into theories about exactly why this happened beyond the obvious, which is that Bush ignored warnings from multiple governments, from his own intelligence agency. He ignored a CIA analyst who flew all the way to Crawford, Texas to warn him. Or maybe he didn't ignore it. Maybe he just decided, I don't want to be in D.C. when this happens. And he went to Florida instead, and we got 9/11. And then he responded to it in a way that has devastated the United States' standing around the world.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And Bush and his buddies exploited the 9/11 disaster to get the Patriot Act passed, which, they'd been trying to push for years to get this thing to destroy our civil liberties as well. Welcome back. Zach in San Jose, California. Hey, Zach, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi. Tom, actually, pretty much listen to your program from time to time. I agree on certain issues, with the whole thing with 9/11, but you've actually had not mentioned anything about key issues, which are the Zionist faction of 9/11, which actually includes all the key Israeli players like Dov Zaheim and like Larry Silverstein, along with like the Five Desert Israelis, which consists of Paul and Savon Kurtzberg.
Jacob, what's your point? Excuse me, Z. What's your point?
The point is, I think it's about time to really talk about all the Zionist war hawks that are still continuing the war for Israel.
Okay. All right. I don't think this is the time to have the conversation, frankly, but, good try. Jacob, we started the show today with Medea Benjamin talking in some regard about that. Jacob in Clarksville, Georgia. Hey, Jacob, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering, you talked about Medicare, I think, and I was wondering how Medicare is not a form of socialism.
I'm not sure that, a true socialism is where the government actually owns the means of supply, distribution, or the services that are being provided. So in the United Kingdom, you have a truly socialist healthcare system. The National Health Service of the UK put into place in the 1950s, I think it was in 56. The National Health Service of the UK, the hospitals are owned by the government. The doctors and nurses are employees of the government. The government owns the ambulances. The government owns all the equipment in the hospitals. That is socialized medicine. Medicare provides payment to doctors and hospitals, but the government is merely the paymaster. They basically just write the checks. And that's why it's generally considered not to be a socialized medicine, but a socialized payment system, if you want. Yeah. This is where the problem where we get into these, what is the definition of socialism, Jacob? This still allows for free enterprise and for-profit activity. What's the point of your question?
Well, I'm Canadian, so I'm French Canadian, and honestly, I hated Canada so much. I'm so happy I moved to America. I guess my point is that I've seen a country go to socialism. And like you said,
Canada?
Like full socialism. But like,
I'm not buying it, Jacob. I'm not buying it. These scam calls. You know, I know Canadians. My son-in-law he's a U.S. citizen now. Is Canadian, born French Canadian. And I get it that right-wing trolls call in periodically and go, "Oh, thank God I left Canada." I'm not buying it. Enough. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Stick around. Welcome back. So let's continue our conversation here. Zach in North Hollywood, California. Hey, Zach, what's up?
Morning, Tom.
Hey, Zach.
You remember the old meme, might is right, war is good, bomb them over there before they bomb us over here and all that.
I remember variations of that during the Vietnam War.
And that's the old guard rule. And I say that's all still was and still is born out of fearing the other instead of helping the other. You know, think of it. Bombing other countries decreases our security and increases the odds that we'll be attacked. Just imagine for a second and add up the revenue that's been spent on ordnance since 9/11. Take that number and imagine for a second if that had been spent on basic infrastructure. Say we go and build just a main street for someone.
We could have rebuilt this entire country with the money we spent in Afghanistan.
And then struggle.
We've got to crank up the gain on that hybrid. Zach,
welcoming us.
Zach, we could have rebuilt the United States. We have spent something on the order of $2 to $3 trillion, and it's going to be five by the time we're all done, paying for our veterans and everything else, on Iraq and Afghanistan. If George W. Bush hadn't lied us into two absolutely unnecessary wars, we could have rebuilt America. We could have trains that are traveling 300 miles an hour like they do in China. We could have broadband for $30 a month for everybody in the country like they do in Chattanooga or they do in France. I mean, we could have done so much if we had simply done this. Spot on. Thanks a lot for the call. Cece in upstate New York. Hey, Cece, what's up?
Hi. My husband was a fireman on 9/11. He was working that morning. His part of the house, the ladder, was left to protect northern Manhattan, so he wasn't down there. But I thought he was. But that night he went down, and he spent like the next year on that pile.
Wow.
And two or three days in, Christine Todd Whitman said, "The air is fine, the air is fine," on television.
And yeah, I played that clip an hour or so ago. Yeah.
I'm glad it's still around. And I said, "You do not take that mask off, or I swear I'll kill you myself." And I used to always check that he wore his mask, and he did. And a lot of guys did it. And he ended up with asthma, but many of the men had horrible lung infections and died then.
Yeah.
And every week, every month, he gets the fireman's newsletter, and there's two or three more 9/11 deaths on it. So they absolutely lied from that woman's mouth to the next year. And, you know, there's no repercussions for them lying. And it's just really disheartening. I don't know, like, he could still die from cancer. It is 17 years out, but we still don't know.
Cancer can have a long gestation period. Yeah, Cece, this is it was Rudy Giuliani and George W. Bush and Karl Rove who wanted to make sure that there was, no perception of problem. In particular, Bush was worried that it was going to come out that he had been warned and repeatedly. I mean, the CIA was begging him to do something. He had been warned that this was coming. And, so they were trying to cover that up as well. But spot on. I'm so sorry to hear that, your husband's friends are dying and that your husband has had some health problems. Please give him our best and thank him for the work that he did. That is a brutal story. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom, not too much. Hey, I just want to say you by far have the best insight of any commentator on this, on the post 9/11, global war on terror thing. And, I have spent so much time in Afghanistan and Iraq that I could have bought a house at either in either country. But you, you know, I don't even think it's really that a priority to you. So I really enjoy what you, you know, you put out about it. I just wanted to say there were three things during the Kavanaugh hearings that really scared me.
Mm-hmm.
One is he said that, you know, it's the same old meme that 9/11 was the worst attack on America ever. Untrue. He also said that every day was September 12th to George Bush. I think every day was September 12th to Brett Kavanaugh. And he also said that he won't answer a question about if a president can pardon themselves because it's a hypothetical. But Saddam Hussein pardoned himself. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So
I thought it was weird that he said every day is September 12th, because on September 12th, George W. Bush was frantically hopscotching around the country on Air Force One, trying to find a safe city where there, you know, no terrorists might be. I mean, it was bizarre. Did you remember that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I remember clearly. I was at Fort Huachuca on September 11th, and I would just add that there's no way that you know, the liberal worldview and the conservative worldview are completely separate. All right? I'm not going to put a value judgment on either one, but if any Democrat had been president or any liberal, we would not be where we're at right now.
I agree. Dave, thanks a lot for the call. George in Chicago. George, we just have 30 seconds to the end of the show. You want a quick point you want to make?
Any discussion of 9/11 has to take into account Rudy Giuliani's corruption, dishonesty, and incompetence. Prior to 9/11, a committee of experts recommended that New York build a new emergency command center in an outer borough underground. Giuliani refused because he wanted one he could walk to in Manhattan. Therefore, the command center was in the Twin Towers. It was destroyed. That's why Rudy was walking around the streets talking to New Yorkers and getting great media coverage, because he had no command center to go to thanks to his own dishonesty and incompetence. Also, there was the matter of the firemen's radios.
Yeah,
they should.
George, I'm going to have to leave it at that because it's the end of the show. But thank you. Yeah, excellent points all. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us. It's the only way it works is if you show up, get out there, get active tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.